Invite you to continue meditating as I give the talk. Years back, when I first came back to the States, I received a request from a Vipassana teacher to quote one of my translations in his book. So I asked to see the chapter in which the translation is going to appear. And the chapter was on the topic of the two approaches there are to awakening. One approach is that you put in a lot of effort, and you basically create a state of awakened mind. The other is that you realize that the mind already has to be awakened, because you can't create a deathless or unconditioned state of mind. So it's going to be there. And all you have to do is learn how to relax into it. I wrote back to him that there's a third alternative. Because if you just have those two alternatives, it's obvious. Hey, you can relax into awakening. That's pretty cool. Don't have to do too much. You can do it on your weekends. But the third alternative was one that I learned from John Lee's books. He says it's like trying to get fresh water out of salt water. The fresh water is there in the salt water. But if you just let the salt water sit in a bowl, it's not going to separate out. You have to distill it. You have to put forth effort. And everything has to get boiled, the water and the salt, and then they separate. In the same way, you have to put forth effort in the path, not to create the goal, but to uncover what's already there. Without the effort, the uncovering, the separating out will not happen. I never heard back from the teacher. But it's an analogy that I think is useful to hold in mind. We're not trying to create awakening, but it's something that does have to be approached with effort. And we're going to be on a path. This is why the Buddha used the analogy of a path to describe his teachings. First thing he said about his teachings was, it is a path. The last thing he said about his teachings, it's a path. And to follow the path, you've got to develop certain qualities. And you can't develop the awakened quality of the mind, but you do develop the other qualities of the mind that constitute right effort, go into right effort. And that those things are things that you can find in your mind already. If you're looking for your awakened awareness, you're going to miss a lot of the foolish things that you've been doing. And as the Buddha said, seeing your own foolishness is an important part of the beginning of wisdom. Because you see that you've been foolish. One, you recognize that your actions have consequences. You also recognize that you have choices. If you didn't have any choice, you couldn't say that, well, what I did was foolish. It was something that had to be done. But because you have the choice and you chose unwisely, and you recognize that fact, you recognize that you do have some freedom of choice. And you also recognize that your actions have consequences. And that realization, you have choices, your actions have consequences, that's the beginning of right view. So you can learn from your foolishness. When you learn from your foolishness, that's how you become wise. As I mentioned yesterday, I'd like to write a book, Wisdom for Dummies. If it weren't a problem with copyright, I probably would have written it a long time ago. It's when people are willing to admit their ignorance, that's when they can learn. There was a famous John in Thailand who came to see a John Lee one time. He announced to his friends he was going to see a John Lee and discuss the Dharma. And he came and they talked. John Lee talked about all kinds of other things. And when that other John left, someone asked John Lee, he said he was going to come and discuss the Dharma. Why didn't you discuss the Dharma? And John Lee said, well, someone thinks they're already good. What can you teach them? So you start out by admitting your foolishness, looking for it, but also realizing that you do have good potentials inside. You don't look for the awakening potential, but you look for the potentials for following the path. You've got virtue, you've got concentration, you've got discernment. We have these things to some extent already. It's not like you're killing all the time or stealing all the time. There are many times when you reframe. Same with your concentration. There are things that you can focus on. The Thai Johns like to talk about this. Why is it that you can sit and watch a movie for 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and not complain? But if you sit for 40 minutes, it's hard. It's because the mind has levels of concentration. It's what's called momentary concentration. And then there's what this is called access concentration. It probably penetrating, just fixed penetration. And where does fixed penetration come from? It comes from stitching together moments of momentary concentration. So you've got the potential there already. Momentary concentration can focus on something until it gets either bored or finds it unpleasant, then it goes. Access concentration can focus on things and even get past boredom, can get past unpleasant things. But then it begins to blur out when it runs into pleasure. Just wallows in the pleasure and that's it. But where are you going to get the fixed penetration? Out of these lower levels of concentration. So you've got the potential already there. The same with your discernment. The main principle of discernment is seeing where you're causing unnecessary suffering or stress and learning how to stop. And this is a lesson you've learned in a lot of areas in your life already. The problem is that it's not consistent. There are times when you know that something is going to give long-term harm, but it gives short-term pleasure. And it's hard to say no to the short-term pleasure. Or the times when you know something will give you long-term happiness and well-being, but in the short term, it's going to be hard. Those are the areas where you have to use your discernment to learn how to think in the long term. But this principle of when you see that you're doing something that's causing unnecessary stress and suffering and realizing it's unnecessary, that you have the choice not to do it. There are a lot of areas in your life where you've already learned that lesson. The Buddha is simply asking you to learn that lesson thoroughly all around. So you've got the potentials for virtue, concentration, discernment already there. It's just that they're not consistent. And a lot of the path is learning how to take these potentials you have and make them more consistent. It's not like the Buddha is asking you to do the impossible. And he's not saying like you're hopeless. It's just that he's saying, hey, learn how to be more consistent in how you understand these lessons. This is the main lesson of his awakening, that he was able to find the unconditioned through his efforts. And these were not based on any ability that was superhuman or that other people don't have. They're abilities we all have in a potential form, and we can develop them. So a lot of the path is looking at that, looking at your potentials, learning how to value them, and then work on developing them. Now, the development is going to require some consistency and a lot of motivation. The Buddha himself said there were three qualities that were crucial to his awakening. One was heedfulness. The other was ardency, and the third was resolution. Heedfulness is basically seeing that there are dangers. The dangers outside, also dangers in your own mind. You're living with greed, aversion, and delusion. And even though there are times when you use your greed, aversion, and delusion on the path, you've got to be really careful of them. It's like keeping a pet snake in the house. There are uses for the snake, but there are also dangers involved with them. And you realize that if you don't make the effort to overcome these dangers, it's going to be trouble. But heedfulness also means that it is possible to get past these dangers. If it were not possible, heedfulness would not mean anything. You just have to, succumb to the dangers. But the fact that your actions make a difference mean that you should be really careful about what you do. Think about the long-term consequences and make that a very live part of your mind. Because the moment will come when you die. And where is it going to happen? It's going to happen right here in the present moment. And you said, well, I knew it was going to come, but I didn't know it was going to come right here. And you have to be prepared. This is where you draw on your other strengths. The ardency, basically realizing that your actions will make a difference. So you really want to try, put your whole heart into trying to learn what is skillful and what is not skillful, and develop what is skillful and abandon what is not. And learn how to enjoy it. Having the proper attitude here is really, really important. I know a lot of people who say, well, I got my mind into concentration, but I know that it's going to fall away and it just seems so hopeless. We have to learn how to appreciate as you're developing these skills step by step by step. As the Buddha taught his son, if you see that you've done something that actually did cause long-term harm, even though you didn't mean to, you go talk it over with someone else and resolve not to repeat that mistake. But if you see that your actions have caused no harm at all, just take joy in that fact. We had the question yesterday about what if I feel I don't deserve happiness? We can point to the good things you've done. Say, these really are good. And if there are any cynical voices in your mind that say, you're just pretending, you can ask the cynical voice, well, what do you know? Do you have my well-being at heart? So you take joy in what you've done, but at the same time, you don't rest there. The Buddha says you take joy in what you've done, and then you continue training. He himself said that one of the secrets to his awakening was an attitude of discontent with skillful qualities. Listen to that. Discontent with skillful qualities. Not only was he discontent with unskillful qualities, but as long as his qualities, good qualities of mind, hadn't reached the end yet, he was not going to rest. So learning how to find the proper balance between appreciating the goodness you've done, using that as a source of encouragement, but also realizing there's more to be done. Finding that proper balance between the two is going to be crucial, the right attitude to have on the path. Until you finally get to the point where you find joy in the fact that you are discontent with skillful qualities. In other words, you hold to yourself to high standards and you feel good about holding yourself to high standards. Having the compassion to realize that there will be times when you fall short, but hey, you can learn. When you put these qualities together in this way, you've got the right attitude for the path. So you've got the potentials within you, you've got the right attitude to stay on the path, to keep on progressing. Think of this as a marathon. You're not here just for short spurts of running, but it's a long-term process. And learn how to keep yourself motivated. The Buddha's Dhamma talks were described that he in such a way that he would instruct, encourage, rouse, and urge. Four verbs. One of them is giving information, three of them is giving encouragement. And the way you talk to yourself is going to be important. Learn how to encourage yourself in these ways. And as you develop more wisdom in this area, that's a lot of the wisdom that you're going to need for the uncovering deeper truths starts with the ability to know how to talk to yourself in a way that keeps you on the path. But the important thing to realize is that the path is something that you develop from within. Even things that are you're going to have to let go of at some point, you do have to learn how to hold on to them first. My favorite images for the path is taking a raft across a river. And everybody emphasizes the final point of that is, which is once you've gotten to the other side, you let go of the raft. But you let go of the raft with appreciation. And what's the raft made out of? And how do you get over to the other side? Those are the important things you want to focus on. As the Buddha says, you come to this river and you see that where you are is dangerous and where you are is where. So you've got the five aggregates, you've got clinging. And the river itself is dangerous, but the other side is Nibbana. Now, there is no Nibbana yacht that's scheduled to come over and pick you up. But you can make a raft. So you take the twigs and branches on this side of the river. In other words, the aggregates you have, their sense of self. And you learn how to put them together in such a way that you can float across the river. So you will be using your sense of self. You'll be using your sense of yourself as a responsible agent. If you hear somebody saying that if you have the idea that you are doing the path, that's wrong view. Well, if that were true, then the Buddha had wrong view. Because when he talks about himself getting on the path, these are things he chose to do, decisions he chose, made, actions he followed through with. When he was instructing Rahula to look at his actions and learn how to learn from his mistakes, there's always the question, this action that I want to do, this action that I am doing, this action that I have done, I. A useful use of your sense of self. And so you hold on to those things as you need them as you get across. You need your sense of self as being competent to do the path, the sense that you will benefit from doing the path, the sense that you can observe what's going on, observe your own actions, observe the results, and a sense that you can pass judgment, again, in a wise way on what's working and what's not working. And that the quality of passing judgment also has to have some ingenuity. If your inner critic can do nothing but criticize, say, wait a minute, I don't want to listen to you until you give me some ideas of what I could do better or how I could do it better. The Buddha talks about ingenuity as an important part of the path, and it's one of the teachings that's not emphasized enough. When something doesn't work, you say, well, that didn't work, let's try something else. And if that doesn't work, let's try something else. This comes down to the quality of resolution, the third quality the Buddha talked about, which is that you stick through things even when it looks pretty grim. No, when the world looks like a bad place to be, you say, well, I can still create a good path inside, and not only will I benefit, but people around me will benefit as well. So you hold to that even when things look bleak. The thing about the Buddha, he had tried different practices, he tried 6 years of austerities, and that didn't work. And the question is, well, what's left? And it was when he had that memory of his experience in childhood, spontaneous concentration. He said, could this be the path? And something inside him said, well, let's give it a try. That's the attitude you've got to take. Stick with it even when things look dark. Because this is a path that's been tread by many people over the centuries. They've all said it's worth it. Whatever difficulties there are, more than worth it. The Buddha himself said one time, if you could have a deal that you would be willing to be speared 100 times in the morning, 100 times at noon, 100 times in the evening, every day for 100 years, but you'd be guaranteed awakening at the end. He said it'd be a good deal. And when you attained awakening, you wouldn't think you'd attain it with pain. You'd attain it with joy. So the goal when you get there is that good. So in the meantime, hold on to the raft. Put together what you need out of your sense of the body when you focus on it in meditation, out of your feelings, your perceptions, your thought constructs, your consciousness. Put those together in a way that you can hold on to it as you go across. And don't make a show of letting go in the middle of the river. And when you get to the other side, as the Buddha said, you put the raft down. You don't have to carry it on your head. But you put it down with a sense of appreciation. This path has done a lot of good for me. So when you let go of your sense of self, it's not out of a neurotic fear of yourself or a neurotic hatred of yourself. It's simply because you realized my sense of self could take me only so far. My sense of self as a conscious agent, capable of making decisions, capable of reading situations so that you can improve. There'll come a point where you don't need that anymore, and you let it go. And it's not true that you'll be unconscious, as the Buddha said. There is a state of consciousness which is not part of the aggregates. That's the clean water we're looking for. And you found it by following the path with heedfulness, with ardency, and with resolution. So it's a good path to be on, and learn how to enjoy being on the path. As the Buddha said, learn how to delight in the Dharma, learn how to delight in the process of abandoning unskillful qualities, developing skillful ones. Patting yourself on the back when you need to, but then telling yourself, okay, that was good, but there's even better. Notice you say that was bad. I said that was good, but hey, there's better. And be happy you're on a path that keeps offering better. That's how you see yourself all the way to the end.